Just a reminder, you're listening to The Swing Era, and I'm your host, Bud Pearson. I would welcome any comments or requests. Just email us. Our address is swingera@earthlink.net. That's swingera@earthlink.net. Back to the swing era with Harry James and the gang kicking the devil around.
Brothers and sisters, the devil's after you. But if you've got religion, there's nothing he can do. Sisters, don't let him get you down. Swing out with hallelujah and fast word of love.
The sinful man was booked to go. The devil was waiting down below. But something happened just before he died. He had a vision, saw the light. He told the devil, go fly a kite. And so the devil sat down and cried.
Oh, the devil sat down and cried. For a sinner had hurt his pride.
Just to show was no mistake, he told the devil, go jump in the lake.
And so the devil sat down and cried, cried. Oh, the devil sat down and cried.
Misery. The devil said, you belong to me. Just wait until you cross the great divide. The sinner answered, is it so? Then told the devil a place where to go. And so the devil sat down and cried.
I'll have to dream the rest. If you can't remember the things that we said, those nights that my shoulder held your sleepy head, if you believe that parting's best, I guess I'll have to dream the rest. I guess I'll have to dream alone of honeymoon cruises once dear to my heart, of one-room apartments where we said we'd start, of foolish things we planned to own. I guess I'll have to dream alone. I can see that your heart has gone astray. As for me, I love you the same old way. I guess I'll have to dream the rest. There'll be no friends waiting to throw shoes and rice. Those heavenly moments will never come twice. I'm thankful for the hours you've blessed. I guess I'll have to dream the rest. I guess I'll have to dream the rest. There'll be no friends waiting to throw shoes and rice. Those heavenly moments will never come twice. I'm thankful for the hours you've blessed. I guess I'll have to dream the rest. I guess I'll have to dream the rest.
On the swing era, we just heard a tune popular in mid-1941. I Guess I'll Have to Dream the Rest, with Dick Haymes vocal and Harry James trumpet. And starting the set, Harry and the band, along with Helen Forrest and Dalton Rizzuto, with the story of The Devil Sat Down and Cried, from October 1941. Harry James and his trumpet on the swing era.
The sparkle in your eye is gone. Your smile is just a careless yawn. You're breaking my heart, you've changed. You've changed, your kisses now are so blasé. You're bored with life in every way. I can't understand, you've changed. It's not true when you say I love you. I've seen my dreams come and go. Now when you say the words I love you, it's just out of habit, I know. You've changed. Why do you act the way you do? Are you just telling me we're through? Though I still love you, you've changed. It's all over now. It's all wrong. Somehow you
it on the Swing Era, a nice tune, not well remembered though, from July 1942. Helen Forrest sang the Manhattan Serenade. And in the middle, Dick Haymes back, this time with one of his best for Harry. He sang You've Changed from October 1941. And leading off, Harry's trumpet heard on his evergreen My Melancholy Baby from the same October 1941 session. The last dance on the swing era with Harry James and the Music Makers.
Thank you.
dragon, wasting all your time just bragging, when you should be busy plowing and a-planting. You stand there a-ranting, get no harvest tooting your horn, bragging. You ain't got no cause for bragging, when your barn needs mending and your lawn needs mowing. How come you're a-crowing like a no-good rooster or a dog? Bragging about your fishing, about your horseshoe pitching, bet you always keep the score. Talking about your medal, that's the kind they peddle down at the 5 and 10 store. Bragging, folks ain't got no use for bragging. If your fields are greener, folks will hear about it. You don't have to shout it, fields were green afore you were born. Folks ain't got no use for bragging. If your fields are greener, folks will hear about it. You don't have to shout it, fields were greener before you were born.
On the last set, Harry James with his March 1941 recording titled Braggin', with Dick Hames singing. And in the middle, a tribute by Harry to the 1941 Brooklyn Dodgers with the Jack Mathias arrangement of the Dodgers Fan Dance. It's been said that James, a great baseball fan, judged his band members not only on how well they could play music, but also how well they could play baseball. And kicking it off, World War II memories, as Helen Forrest sang about the makeover of her boyfriend in the Army, "My Beloved is Rugged," from July 1942. And there you have it, Harry James, on the Swing Era. So many records and so little time to play them. We'll go back to the record vault next week for more discs, though, that's for sure. Till then, this is your host, Bud Pearson, hoping you've enjoyed Harry James and his music makers. If you did, join us here next week when we'll present more artists who created the styles and the sounds of the swing era. We'll see you then, and remember, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
KCEA Atherton, Redwood City. Online at kcea.org. The home of the big band.
Our imagination, the comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and again, welcome to Yesteryear, the best of the golden age of radio. On today's program, a couple of great murder adventures and mysteries as we present The Whistler, starring Bill Forman, and Murder by Experts in the case of Summer Heat. Murder by Experts aired from June 1949 through December 1951 and received the Mystery Writers of America's prestigious Edgar Award, presented on air by Alfred Hitchcock. Playwright David Kogan teamed up with Robert Arthur in 1938, and Kogan and Arthur Productions produced radio scripts for some 14 years for a variety of programs, including The Shadow, Dark Destiny, The Mysterious Traveler, and, of course, Murder by Experts. Murder by Experts was regularly hosted by John Dixon Carr, a frequent contributor to Suspense. On today's program, a man wakes up to find a corpse in his bed after graduation and attempts to get rid of the body. Starring Lawson Zerbe as Paul Baxter, Bill Zuckert as Duggan and the hospital orderly, and Cameron Andrews as Bert. From June of 1949, here's Summer Heat, Murder by Experts, on this edition of Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in The Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Burton Marr, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
Murder by Experts. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Murder by Experts with your host and narrator, Mr. John Dixon Carr, world-famous mystery novelist and author of the recently published bestseller, The Life of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
This is John Dixon Carr. Each evening at this time, Murder by Experts brings you a story of crime and mystery, which has been chosen for your approval by one of the world's leading detective writers. Those experts who are themselves masters of the art of murder and can hold tensity at its highest. Tonight's guest expert is Mr. Hugh Pentecost, author of many memorable thrillers, who has selected a story by a young newcomer you'll do well to watch, Andrew Evans. Be very careful as you listen, for, as Mr. Pentecost says of this thriller, the story has not only a twist, but an unforeseen double twist, which takes one completely by surprise. And now we present Summer Heat. Look now at the old elms, the ivy-covered buildings on the campus of a small Midwestern university. It's a fine June afternoon when you hear laughter and the greetings of the reunion of the class of 36. 12 years have passed, but none of the members of the class seems much older to each other. There's the dark-haired Paul Baxter wandering rather strangely. There are two of his old friends, prosperous now, judged by their clothes, and boisterous in greeting.
Paul Baxter! You old rascal! It's sure good to see you again.
Oh, hello, Steve. Bert, this is a surprise.
Why didn't you ever write to us, Paul? You had our addresses.
Why, sure. That's no way to treat old classmates. Just think, 12 years. Yeah. Oh, they sure have gone fast.
Too fast to suit me. Say, Paul, you've turned awful gray for only 33.
Well, he always did take things too seriously. I suppose by now, Paul, you're one of the biggest lawyers in the state, huh? How's Marcia?
Yeah, you were all set to marry her after graduation, remember?
Yes, and you were going to become her father's junior law partner. Oh, you sure had a sweet setup there.
Well, things worked out a little differently. You see, that party we had graduation night, do you remember it?
Remember it? How can we forget it?
Oh, that was a real blowout. And were you tight, Paul?
You know, that party, it sort of changed my whole life.
Changed your life? Well, how?
Well, I don't remember much about the party itself. I guess I had too many drinks. In fact, I don't remember anything until I woke up the next morning. I could hear old Trinity ringing. I awoke to find myself on the couch in my living room. It was noon. The room was hot, stiflingly hot. I remembered I had a date with Marcia and her father at 1 o'clock. I got to my feet. My head ached. There were heat waves before my eyes. Feeling sick, I staggered toward my bedroom, and then I saw him. A man, asleep on my bed, his back to me. For a moment, I stood there, trying to remember if someone had come home from the party with me. But the night before was a total blank. I crossed to the bed, bent over, shook his shoulder. Hey, fella. Hey, it's noon. Wake up. Come on, wake up. As I shook him, he had flopped over and looked up at me with staring eyes. He was dead. And there was a knife in his chest. My hunting knife. I stood stunned, staring down at the body on my bed. The dead man was an utter stranger to me. He was neatly dressed in old clothes. And my knife was in his heart. I killed him. I couldn't remember when or how or why, but I'd killed him. Frantically, I tried to remember what had happened. Was he a panhandler? Someone I'd met on the street and drunkenly brought home with me? I didn't know. I couldn't remember. As I stood there, trying to get a grip on myself, I suddenly realized there was someone at the door. Instinctively, I walked into the living room and towards the door. Just as I was about to open it, I realized the danger of letting anyone into the apartment. I put my ear against the door and listened. I heard voices. Yours, Steve. And yours, Bert.
Hey, Paul, open up. We want to say goodbye.
Come on, Paul. Wake up, will you? We're leaving for California in 15 minutes.
I guess old Paul isn't in.
Yeah. I wonder how he felt when he woke up.
Boy, what a head he must have had.
Still, I sure hate to leave without saying goodbye.
Well, he has our California address. He can write to us. Come on, or we'll miss that train.
Then they were both gone, and I dared to breathe again. I tried to think calmly, figure out what to do. I knew I should call the police, but they might charge me with murder. And what defense could I offer? I thought of Marcia. The slightest scandal and everything would be off. Our marriage, my job, my future. I couldn't call the police. I couldn't call them and sacrifice everything I'd worked for. Somehow I had to get the body out of my apartment, get rid of it before it was found. Then it came to me. My car was in the basement, garage. The dumbwaiter in the kitchen led down to the basement. I could put the dead man in the dumbwaiter, lower him to the basement, get him in my car, and then...
Mr. Paul! Oh, Mr. Paul!
It was Jenny, the cleaning woman. She'd let herself in with her key. I hurried into the living room, closing the bedroom door behind me.
Oh, there you are. A fine time for a rising young lawyer to be getting up.
Oh, hello, Jenny. I guess I overslept. I was at a party last night.
A party, was it? Everyone on the campus is talking about it. And the complaints. Well, now step aside and let me into that bedroom. I gotta start cleaning.
Jenny, can't you come back later and do the place?
No, I can't. Now get out of my way.
Jenny, wait. I don't want you to clean up yet.
Paul, what's wrong? Why are you blocking the door like that?
Well, the truth of the matter is, one of the boys had a bit too much last night, and he's in my bedroom sleeping it off.
Oh, well, get him out of there. Take him to a Turkish bath.
Turkish bath. Oh, yes, that's a good idea. Look, Jenny, just give me half an hour to get him dressed and out of here. Then you can come back and clean up.
A half hour, nothing. I'll give you exactly 5 minutes.
All right, Jenny, I'll have him out of here by then.
You'd better.
She was gone, and I had 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. I went into the bedroom and quickly went through the dead man's pockets. They were empty. There was no identification in them. The thin, pinched face told me he was a nobody, a derelict, someone who might never be missed. As I was about to lift him off the bed, the phone rang. A shrill ring filled the room. Hello?
Hello, darling.
Marcia.
How was your stag party last night? Did you miss me?
Miss you?
You sound as though you have a dreadful hangover.
Hangover? Oh, yes. Oh, excuse me a minute, Marcia. There's someone at the door. Yes?
I'll be coming in to clean your room in another minute, Paul.
Jenny.
So get your friend out of there.
Oh, yes, Jenny, yes. Just give me another minute and we'll be out of here. Marcia, I can't talk to you any longer. I'm in a hurry.
Then you haven't forgotten your appointment with Father and myself at 1 o'clock.
No. I may be a little late, but I'll be there.
Paul, you mustn't be late. I've told you over and over what a stickler Father is for punctuality. He can't stand people who are late for appointments. Well, you recall how furious he was when you didn't show
up. I know, Marcia, but I...
You have 45 minutes to shave, shower, and dress. That's plenty of time. And, Paul, wear your gray flannel suit with the blue knitted tie and be sure you're there on
time. Yes, Marcia, yes, but I've got to hang up. Jenny will be coming back any minute that I...
Well, what if she is? Now, darling, you haven't forgotten what we discussed yesterday afternoon.
Yesterday afternoon?
Yes. Now, I know Father's brusque and inclined to bully people, but don't let it upset you. After all, it's our future he's...
Marcia, I can't talk any longer. I've got to hang up. Jenny will be back. I've only seconds left.
What in the world are you talking about? Now, when Father asks
Marcia,
you...
I've got to hang up. I've got to. Goodbye. I hung up the phone and wiped the sweat running down my face. It took only a moment to lift him off the bed, carry him into the kitchen, pull the dumbwaiter up and put his body into it. I closed the door to the dumbwaiter, ran out of the apartment and started down the stairs to the basement. I got down to the basement to find Ben, the janitor, leisurely pulling on the dumbwaiter rope. Ben! Oh, Ben.
Oh, hello, Paul. Yeah, but your car, you're after. It's there by the door, all washed like you asked.
Thanks, but Ben, stop a minute, will you? I want you to do something for me.
Sure, Paul. Just as soon as I've emptied this dumbwaiter...
Will you stop blowing that dumbwaiter? Stop, you hear?
Hey, what's wrong with you? You're acting mighty strange.
I'm sorry I shouted like that, Ben. It's just that... Well, there's a package up in my apartment that I'd like you to mail right away. There's a dollar in it for you.
All right. But there ain't no need to rush. Today's Sunday. The post office is closed.
Closed?
Sure. Say, what's the matter with you anyway? Must be the heat. Something awful heavy on this somewhere.
Wait a minute. There's something else.
How's that?
Stop a minute, will you? How can I talk to you while you're lowering that dumbwaiter?
Well, go ahead. I can hear everything you're saying.
Let go of that rope. Let go, you hear it.
Hey. You going crazy or something? I've half a mind to call a super and tell him why.
No, don't do that. Ben, up in my apartment, there's a bottle.
Bottle?
Yes, I brought it home last night. It's half full. I wanted you to have it for cleaning the car.
Oh, thanks. I sure appreciate that, Paul. I'll go up and get it as soon as I've emptied this dumbwaiter. It's almost down now.
But then Jenny just went in to clean. You know how she feels about drinking?
Jenny? Jumping grasshoppers. Why didn't you say so? That woman will pour it all down the drain if I don't get there first.
As soon as Ben disappeared up the stairs, I pulled the dumbwaiter the rest of the way down, opened the door, and he fell into my arms. Slinging the body over my shoulder, I staggered with it to my car and swiftly dropped him on the floor in the back. It was an old touring car. The top was long since gone. To hide the body from view, I covered it with an old blanket. A moment later, I started the motor and rolled smoothly out of the basement and into the driveway. As I did, I heard Ben shouting to me from my window.
Paul, hey, Paul, wait a minute. I got something.
I pretended not to hear Ben calling. Instead, I stepped on the gas. I was almost proud of myself as I drove past the campus. I was in trouble, but I was thinking fast, as a good lawyer should. I'd already decided I'd have to get rid of him by dumping him into the river. As I came to Main Street, driving neither too fast nor too slow, I turned left toward the river. There was very little traffic, and I was just about to speed up when behind me I heard a whistle blowing. It was Dugan, the town's only traffic cop, and he was blowing for me to stop. There was nothing to do but pull over to the curb. As Dugan hurried up to me, I realized I'd driven through a red light. Hello, Dugan.
Never mind that hello, Dugan stuff. What's the matter, you colorblind?
I'm sorry, Dugan. I just didn't notice the light.
You just didn't notice the light. That's fine. Think you and me had better take a ride over to Justice Miller.
Oh, look, don't run me in, Dugan. It won't happen again.
That's what all you college cut-ups say. Next thing you know, you'll be telling me... What do you got there in the back? Underneath that blanket?
Under the blanket?
You heard me. What's under it?
Why, that's Roy Hamilton, one of my classmates.
Yeah, well, what's he lying on the floor under a blanket on a hot day like this for?
Last night at our farewell shindig, Roy had a few too many. He's still out. I'm taking him home.
Where does he live?
At Mrs. Randolph's boarding house.
What are you handing me? That's in the other direction.
Yes, yes, I know, but first I'm taking him to the Turkish bath on Elm Street.
Yeah, well, by the time you get him there, the poor guy will be dead. Ain't you got no sense?
What do you mean?
Look at the way you got the blanket over his head and in this heat, too. I better pull the blanket off his face so he can breathe.
No! I mean, I covered his face on purpose. Suppose Dean Richards or somebody saw Roy like this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Just the same, I better...
Constable, can I see you for a minute?
I'll be right with you, Jensen. Johnson. Where were we, Baxter? Oh, yeah, the guy in the back. He'll smother to death if we don't move the...
Look, it's important. I've got to see you right away.
I'm coming. I won't run you in this time, Baxter, but from now on, stay awake when you're driving.
I will, Dugan.
And for Pete's sake, pull the blanket off that guy's head. Take it easy, Jensen. I'm coming.
As I stepped on the gas, I muttered a prayer of thanks for old Johnson, the janitor of the medical school building, who had called Dugan just as he was reaching for the blanket that covered my passenger. It was a few minutes after one as I drove out of town. I could picture Marcia's father fuming in my lateness. The sun was scorching in my open car as I drove along River Road, looking for a place to hide the body. I needed one where there were trees to hide me. The hours that followed were like a nightmare. The heat was stifling, and I could feel my hand shaking on the wheel from nervous tension. I drove and drove and drove, looking for a place to get rid of the body. But the whole countryside seemed to be swarming with people, families picnicking, Boy Scouts camping, kids in swimming, couples in parked cars. No matter where I turned, there was always someone in sight. Little spots danced before my eyes. Waves of faintness swept over me. My hand began to ache in my head, too. Unbearably. It was already long after 3. I was late for my date with Marcia and her father. That didn't matter. Nothing mattered but to get rid of the body in the back of the car. I had to get rid of it. I had to. I drove mile after mile. turning from one road to another, searching endlessly for a safe place to stop. Then I realized I was running out of gas. I saw a gas station ahead, and I decided to stop there. It was a risk, but I had to take it.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Okay, mister. It's 5 gallons. Want me to check your oil?
No, thanks. How much?
$1.15. Boy, it's hot, isn't it?
Yes, it's hot, all right. Here you are.
That's 115 out of 5. Now get your change. Hey, this rear tire looks a little flat.
It's all right.
You want me to check it? Won't take but a minute.
It's all right, I tell you.
Okay, mister, just you say. Your rear door's open. I better shut that for you.
Leave that door alone.
But you don't want to drive along with your rear door open. That's funny. There's something in the car jamming it. I better have a...
Leave that door alone and get my change.
But you... All right, mister. It's as you say. Get your change.
Hurried into the station. I looked in the back of the car and saw what had kept the door from closing. It was a hand. His hand sticking out from under the blanket. The attendant had seen it. He would be phoning the police. I drove faster and faster. The police would be on the lookout for me now. My whole future depended on what I did in the next few minutes. And then it came to me. In one brief moment, it came to me. The perfect way to get rid of the body was so simple, so perfect, that I laughed aloud with relief. A half hour later, I was parked in an alley behind one of the university buildings. It was Sunday, and the place was deserted. Despite my fatigue and aching head, it took me but a moment to carry the body into the basement of the medical building. And down the corridor to the basement room where the bodies for the dissecting classes were kept. Where does a wise man hide a leaf? In a forest. Where does a wise man hide a body? In the dissecting room. The room was big and cool and dimly lit. The far end was a long metal tank. I reached the tank and lowered him to the stone floor beside it. I had only to open the tank, slip him inside, and leave. I reached for the lid of the preserving tank and was about to open it when I heard a voice.
Hey, who's in there?
It was Johnson, the janitor. I quickly dropped behind the tank and waited, holding my breath.
I heard you. Stop hiding and come out. I know you're here. I just saw your car through the window. You better come out if you know what's good for you.
He'd seen my car. He knew I was in the room. But if I kept my head, there was a chance, just a chance. All right, Johnson. Here I am.
Baxter, eh? So it's you, is it? You're the one who...
Johnson, wait a minute. Let me explain.
Explain, huh? After last night, I'm not listening to any fancy stories. I'm the one who gets blamed when... What's that on the floor behind you there?
On the floor? What? Why, nothing, Johnson.
Do you think I'm blind or something? Step aside and let me see what... Why, it's a body.
Yes. It's a body.
So that's it. I thought you were trying to steal one. Instead, you were bringing it.
Yes, I was bringing it.
And just what were you going to do with that gentleman on the floor? Put him back in the tank with the rest?
Yes, that's right. I thought he might not be noticed.
As if I wouldn't have known.
Well, go on. Call the cops. Let's get it over with.
All right, Baxter. Of course, I don't have to call the cops. nobody knows about this but you and me.
What? What do you mean?
Well, I was going to make a report, but this way there's no harm done, so I might be able to overlook the whole thing if I was persuaded properly.
You might overlook it?
Eh? That's right. You just leave this fella to me and there's no fuss because nobody's the wiser.
You'd do that? You'd keep your mouth shut?
I guess I could be persuaded to.
How much?
Eh. Well, suppose we say $50.
$50?
That isn't much considering what would happen if I reported you.
Oh, no, it isn't $50. That's very cheap to help me cover up a murder.
Murder? More of your jokes. I'm not talking about murder. I'm talking about putting number 37 here back in his proper place.
Number 37?
Yes, 37. He just came in yesterday from the county poor farm, and last night he disappeared, stolen by you and your drunken friends, and dressed up for a joke. Well, I don't like jokes like that. I drove downtown a while back to tell Dugan the constable about it, but... Well, I didn't tell him anything. It would mean trouble for me for being asleep on the job.
Number 37. He was stolen from here last night.
Aye, that's what I said. As long as you've brought him back, there's no harm done. That's why I'm willing to keep it quiet.
Then I didn't kill him. It was just a joke somebody played on me. Just a practical joke.
Here. What's wrong with you?
It's a joke. It's a very good joke on me. This whole afternoon, driving in the heat, trying to get rid of him, it was just a joke. A joke!
For goodness sakes, he's fainted.
That's the story of what happened the day after our graduation party 12 years ago. When I came to, I was in the college hospital. I'd been unconscious a week. They said it was just a slight breakdown brought on by sunstroke. I was all right after a while, but somehow I wasn't interested in law anymore. Marcia and I didn't get married, and I didn't become her father's junior law partner.
Good Lord, Paul. We never knew any of this.
Gosh, Paul, I can't tell you how sorry I am. We never dreamed our gag would turn out like that.
Your gag?
Why, sure. See, after the party broke up that night, we were feeling pretty high, and... Well, it was a crazy idea, but we thought it would be funny to steal a cadaver from the medical college and leave it in your room with your knife in it.
Then it was you? The two of you?
Well, yes, Paul. Gosh, I feel terrible about this, but... Well, that day we left, we came up to your apartment to tell you about a little joke, only you weren't in.
We had to rush for our train, but we phoned from the station... Ben, the janitor, answered, and we told him to explain about the cadaver.
I heard him calling, but I didn't stop.
Paul, will you ever be able to forgive us for what happened?
Forgive you? Forgive you? No! No, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you, do you hear? Kill you!
Hey, wait a minute.
No! Get him!
Bert, help me.
Paul! Yeah. Paul, let him go!
He's choking me! Help me!
I kill you! I kill you!
Here he is, men. Grab him.
Let go of me. Let go.
Quick, now. Get him back to the hospital.
I'll kill him.
Take him out.
I'll kill him. I'll kill him.
You hurt, mister?
No, I'm all right. But you came just in time. He was trying to kill me.
Why, he sure was. He just went crazy.
Well, I'm sure sorry this happened. See, he slipped away from the hospital this afternoon. We figured he'd head this way.
The hospital?
Yes. Poor fellow had a bad breakdown just after he graduated 12 years ago. He's been locked up ever since.
Locked up?
Yeah. He's always been perfectly harmless, though. He just went around all the time looking for a place to hide something. This is the first time he ever got violent. I can't figure out what came over him.
And so the curtain falls on Summer Heat, which was chosen by guest expert Hugh Pentecost. This is your host, John Dixon Carr, saying good night.
From June of 1949, there's Summer Heat, written by Andrew Evans for Murder by Experts. In a moment, the West Coast's most popular mystery program, The Whistler, as yesteryear continues.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The Whistler narrated his strange tales from May 1942 through July 30th of 1955 over CBS's West Coast Radio Network, announcing his arrival with an eerie 13-note musical theme composed by Wilbur Hatch, the same Wilbur Hatch who conducted the Desi Arnaz Orchestra on the I Love Lucy television series. Gail Gordon portrayed the Whistler in the audition broadcast and was followed by Joseph Kearns, later Suspense's Man in Black. Bill Forman starred in the title role through most of the West Coast's 13-year run, while announcer Marvin Miller filled in as the Whistler during Forman's brief military service during the Second World War. Today's program is Broken Chain by Frank Burt and Robert Lippert. A man receives a mysterious message from his wife at work a few hours after he had killed her. From May of 1946, it's Broken Chain, The Whistler, on this edition of Yesteryear.
Wait a minute. Have you heard The Whistler? I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. Yes, it's time for another strange tale by The Whistler. Each Wednesday evening at this same time, The Whistler brings you an unusual story of conflict and emotion. Tonight, The Broken Chain. The thought had first occurred to him 6 months ago, and of course he'd shuddered a little and cast it out. Of course, Arnold Stanton, respectable businessman, citizen taxpayer, would be horrified at such an idea. So he went back to his routine and resolved never to let himself think about it again. But in spite of him, the thought did come back 2 weeks later, then only a week after that, then at more frequent intervals until he found it popped into his head at least once every day. It was worse on weekends, when he had to be with Evelyn all the time, when her helplessness, her utter dependence on him for everything, rose up and almost smothered him. By now, the thought didn't seem so horrible anymore. It had attained a kind of normal, logical quality, and he found he liked to dwell on it, like a problem in mathematics. In short, Arnold Stanton was ready to murder his wife.
Is that you, Arnold?
Yes, Evelyn.
You're a little late tonight, dear. Did you miss the bus?
Sam Moore drove me home.
Oh, of course. It is Monday.
Yes, Evelyn, it's Monday.
You look so tired, darling. I think you've been working too hard.
Kiss?
Of course.
That's better. You know, we ought to take a little vacation, a day or two. A week, perhaps. We could get a cabin
at Wilder's Cove, right?
What's the matter with Wilder's Cove?
Nothing. It's been good enough for the past 10 years. I suppose it'll do for the next 10.
Oh, you're a darling, Arnold. You always manage to see things my way. And Miss Roberts could look after things at the office while we're gone. Dinner'll be ready in just a minute. Oh, how is she these days?
How is who?
Oh, Miss Roberts, silly.
Same as ever.
You know, darling, we ought to have her out to dinner some evening. Not that I want to share you with another woman, but I think about Miss Roberts and I feel sort of superior. She must lead an awfully dull life.
I don't know. She seems to have her interests.
Oh, such as they are. Poor dear, working so hard in your office all day, going home to that dreadful lonely apartment. Oh, darling, I'm so lucky to have you. I don't know what I'd do if anything should happen, but we won't ever talk about that, will we, dear? We're so happy, Arnold. Now, you sit right down with your paper and I'll have dinner on the table in just a second.
Very well, dear.
There's nothing wrong, is there, Arnold?
No. Why?
Well, you've hardly said a word. What's the matter? Cat got your tongue? Oh, there's a dear. Now, I'll call you in a shake. I have a special surprise. Baked beans, just the way you like them, and apple turnovers. Isn't that right?
Yes, Arnold, this Monday night is different from all the rest. 6 months ago, it was just a vagrant, horrifying idea. Now it's an obsession, isn't it? It's a terrible decision, Arnold. And there's no one to talk it out with. No one in whom you can confide. You sit there staring at the newspaper without seeing it. Thinking. Thinking how you hate her and the senseless prattle you've had to listen to for 10 years across the dinner table. But you can't walk out, Arnold. That's the strange part of it. You've decided it would be too cruel to walk out. She leans on you. She's dependent on you for everything. No, Arnold, you can't walk out.
Arnold, come on, darling. The beans are on the table.
Yes, dear. Coming.
It's odd, isn't it, Arnold? How a random thought like the one that struck you 6 months ago can take hold and grow and finally solidify into something very real. As evening after evening of Evelyn's nonsensical prattle drives you closer and closer to it. Yes, you've decided it has to be tonight, haven't you, Arnold? And you're smart enough to realize that most murderers are tripped up by their own cleverness, that the plan surest of success is the simple one. As usual, you help Evelyn with the dinner dishes. But tonight,
careful,
your mind,
darling,
isn't on your work.
That's my best Haviland china. I don't know why, but it struck me tonight that there's no use letting it gather dust in the closet. We almost never use it, and I said to myself, there's no use having nice things if you can't enjoy them. I think that's right, don't you, Arnold? Don't you think that's right? Arnold, aren't you listening to me?
Oh, sorry, dear. Yes, of course.
Oh, well, here's the casserole. Be careful, dear. I was saying about using the Haviland for every day.
Yes, there's no use having nice things if you can't enjoy them.
Well, I hope you don't think it's wrong, Arnold. It is lovely china, but after all, what's the use in having nice...
Of course,
oh, do be careful with that casserole, dear. Aunt Leona gave it to us for a wedding present, remember? Poor darling. She'd be alive today if it weren't for that terrible accident.
What? Accident? I don't remember.
Oh, of course you do, dear. The bathtub.
The bathtub?
Arnold! Our best casserole!
You try and comfort Evelyn, but she's heartbroken. Her best casserole, Arnold. You do feel sorry for her, don't you? It's clear now that you could never leave her. Why, that would be more cruel than the other way. So there's going to be an accident, isn't there, Arnold? A simple, ordinary accident. Like Aunt Leona's in the bathtub tomorrow morning. Everyone knows she sleeps late. That you always have breakfast in town. That you're at the office working before she gets up.
It's 10 o'clock, dear. Time we were in bed.
I suppose so.
I'm awfully sorry about the casserole, dear.
You probably think I'm being silly about it, Arnold. But after all, it's Haviland, and you just can't buy it these days. It simply isn't to be had, and it's the only thing Aunt Leona gave us. You do understand, don't
you,
Arnold?
I'll try and find another one tomorrow.
Oh, it's no use, Arnold. Haviland just
isn't to be... Let me try, dear. About tomorrow, I forgot to tell you that the coffee shop where I usually have my breakfast is closed for redecoration. I was wondering if you'd mind getting up early tomorrow and fixing me a little breakfast.
Why, I'd love to, dear. You know I love waiting on you.
Yes, I know.
Oh, it'll be fun, Arnold. We'll have hotcakes and sausages and eggs. Oh, my, I am sleepy. I better run up to bed if I'm to get up with the birds. Oh, it'll be fun, Arnold. I think it'd be nice if we did it more often.
Perhaps it would.
Good night, darling. And you do understand
yes,
about
Evelyn,
the casserole.
Yes, Evelyn, I do understand about the casserole.
It's a long night, isn't it, Arnold? The longest night you ever spent in your life. You lie there, wide awake, looking up at the ceiling, at the shadow of the chandelier and the moonlight, the black silhouette of its chain against the pale gray of the ceiling. Yes, Arnold, a chain. That's what you're going to do tomorrow morning, isn't it? Break the chain. Smash it into 1,000 pieces.
Huh? Oh. Oh. Evelyn... Are you awake, Evelyn? She's gone. She's downstairs. Too late. I should have known she... Oh. Evelyn?
Is that you, darling? You see, I didn't forget. I'm just getting into the tub, and I'll have breakfast ready before you get dressed.
Don't hurry. There's plenty of time. Excuse me, dear. There's just one thing before I go downstairs.
With the prologue of The Broken Chain, CBS brings you another strange tale by The Whistler.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now, back to The Whistler.
The chain is broken, Arnold, after 12 years. And Evelyn lies dead where you left her, of an accidental fall in the bathtub. There won't be many questions. There can't be. There were no questions about Aunt Leona, were there? Lots of people fall in bathtubs, hit their heads, and drown. And it's so simple, Arnold. You take the 7:13 bus, as usual. Drop into the coffee shop for breakfast, as usual. Report to the office at exactly the usual time. The neighbors all know she sleeps until well after you've left, that she must have been alone at the time of the fall. All you have to do now is to carry on exactly as you always do, to be careful that nothing happens on this day that will distinguish it from all the other drab, monotonous days before the chain was broken.
Mr. Stanton?
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Roberts. Where was I?
Let's see, We will appreciate anything you can do to expedite shipment, since we are committed on delivery by February 1st.
Oh, yes, Merton Amalgamated Foods. Please add this, Miss Roberts. Mm-hmm. Paragraph. Incidentally, Mrs. Stanton wants particularly to be remembered to your wife and suggests if Mrs. Merton is accompanying you east that you make it a point to stay with us. Regards, and I think that ought to do it.
I'll get it out right away.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, how is Mrs. Stanton lately?
Same as ever. She was sleeping like a baby when I left this morning. You know how she is about getting up early.
Yes, I know. Oh, it's 11:45, Mr. Stanton. Remember, you have a luncheon appointment at 12:30.
Oh, thank you, Miss Roberts. I'll remember.
Arnold. Business as usual. They haven't found her yet. They'll call you as soon as they do, and it can't be much longer. 11:45. Who'll find her, Arnold? The grocery boy or the mailman, perhaps? No, they wouldn't go upstairs. It'll probably be Mrs. Bronson down on the street. Nosy old Mrs. Bronson coming around just about now, pounding on the back door.
Oh, it's you, Richard.
Well, what's the matter, Mr. Stanton? You nearly jumped out of your chair. Tuesday, you know. Our day to go over the accounts.
Oh, yes. The accounts.
Business as usual, Arnold. Everything you do this day is going under a microscope. Richards will remember how you jumped just then. Concentrate on the figures, Arnold.
1944-45, our account with Great Western Stores amounted to $72,800.
But you can't concentrate, no matter how hard you try. Mrs. Bronson will knock on the back door and no one will answer. But how will she get in to discover Evelyn? Did you leave the door unlocked, Arnold? You were so excited that you might have forgotten. That would mean you'd have to find her yourself tonight when you come home.
No, no, I can't do that.
What was that, Mr. Stanton?
Oh, I'm sorry, Richard.
You said you couldn't do something.
Yes. I mean, I can't spend any more time on the reports right now. Would you mind leaving them here so I can check them this afternoon?
Is anything wrong?
No, nothing's wrong, Richard. Please go now.
There was a Mr. West in Haverhill to see you while you were out to lunch, Mr. Stanton.
Haverhill? I don't know any Haverhill.
Well, rather nice-looking young man.
Was he here on business?
Well, he said it was personal and quite important.
I see. Anything else?
No. Were you expecting anything?
No, Miss Roberts. Nothing.
Oh, well, here's your letter to Mrs. Merton. I included that additional paragraph about your wife and... Oh, that reminds me.
Huh? Reminds you of what?
Oh, I'm sorry. There was another message while you were out to lunch, and I don't know how I could have overlooked it. It was right on my pad.
What was it, Miss Roberts?
Well, it was nothing urgent or anything like that.
What was the message?
It was from your wife. She said she's playing bridge at Mrs. Bronson's and may be late getting home this evening. She didn't want you to worry about her. That's all.
Don't faint now, Arnold. You don't want Miss Roberts to see you faint. What she said wasn't so remarkable, just an ordinary telephone call. Business as usual, Arnold. Wait until she gets out of the room. You better say something, anything.
Thank you, Miss Roberts.
Oh, not at all. If you'll sign a letter.
Yes, of course. There you are.
Thank you.
All right, Arnold, she's gone. You can let go now. She won't be back. That's it. Put your head down on the desk and let everything go black.
It can't be true. She's not alive. I saw her die. She's not alive. I'll go home and... Oh, I can't go home. I can't take the chance. Business as usual.
Miss Roberts might have made a mistake, Arnold. Perhaps the message came in yesterday, a week ago. Perhaps she looked at the wrong page of her book by mistake.
Yes, Mr. Stanton?
Miss Roberts?
Yes, sir?
I was just thinking... I was wondering...
Yes? Yes, sir?
No, never mind. I found what I was looking for. Never mind.
Well, if there's anything...
What's the matter with me? I can't make an issue with the phone. Call stand out like a sore thumb afterwards. She... I know she's wrong. I know it. But I gotta rest. I gotta get myself together. Yeah, rest. I'm trying to forget about it.
Why, Mr. Stanton.
Huh?
Are you still here? It's after 5.
Oh, I must have dozed off. I've been working a little too hard lately.
Mr. Stanton, is something wrong?
No, why?
Well, you've acted so strangely all
day. What's
so
strange about a man getting tired and falling asleep?
I don't know, Mr. Stanton. I'm sorry.
Why, I'm sorry, too, Miss Roberts. It's late now. It's after 5. You better run along. I'm going, too. Don't want to be late. Evelyn will be waiting dinner, and
I thought I told you, Mr. Stanton, she's playing bridge.
Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot. By the way, Miss Roberts.
Yes?
Were there any other calls this afternoon?
Oh, I'm glad you reminded me. Mr. Averill called again and said not to disturb you, that he'd see you tonight at home.
Mr. Haverhill. Mr. Haverhill. You don't know who he is or what he is, Arnold. And you haven't got time to think about it now. Perhaps he's a plainclothesman, a detective. Anything is possible, isn't it? You've been such an awful failure. Business as usual, Arnold. Nothing you've done today was usual. Barking at your secretary, jumping at open doors, falling asleep exhausted for 4 hours this afternoon. And they'll remember everything when the time comes, Arnold. But still, you can't run out now. You've got to go through with it. You've got to go home and find out once and for all.
I did leave it unlocked. Evelyn? Are you there, Evelyn? 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 Evelyn! Evelyn? Evelyn, dear?
You stop with your hand on the bathroom doorknob. Somehow you can't go in and face it. Not yet. Not until you're sure, Arnold. The answer is just inside the door on the right. But you can't take it right now. You stand there for a minute, not thinking, not moving, feeling the pulse pound in your temples. And then you find yourself fumbling for a cigarette.
Gotta take it easy. Cigarette.
You tear it to pieces trying to get it out of the package. And then find you have no matches, so you skip the cigarette for the time being.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Bronson?
Yes. Who's this, please?
Arnold Stanton.
Oh, yes, Mr. Stanton.
I don't want to bother you, Mrs. Bronson, but...
Well, is anything the matter? You don't sound quite like yourself.
No, nothing like that, Mrs. Bronson. I just...
Yes?
There was a message for me this afternoon at the office. Something about Evelyn playing bridge, I think.
Oh, yes.
She isn't there with you, is she?
Why, yes, Mr. Stanton. She's right here. Would you like to speak to her?
Yes, I would.
Well, just hold on. Evelyn? Evelyn, dear? Hello?
Evelyn?
What's the matter with you?
Evelyn, I don't understand.
Wait a minute, Mr. Stanton. This is Mrs. Bronson again. Evelyn isn't here after all. I'm terribly sorry. She must have left while I was talking to you. Probably on her way home now. Ought to be there.
Hello?
There she is, Arnold, just as you left her this morning. There's only one answer now. They discovered her and they're trying to trap you. Mrs. Bronson knows. Miss Roberts knew this afternoon. They all know. You run to the window at the end of the hall and look down onto the porch. A tall, serious young man is waiting at the front door. You know who he is, don't you, Arnold? You have to face him, Arnold. One thing more and you'll be sure. Slowly, you walk to the front door.
What is it? What do you want?
I'm sorry, Mr. Stanton.
Get it over with. What do you want?
My name's Haverhill. I've come to talk to you about your wife.
I thought so.
It's a rather serious proposition, you know.
Well, can't you come back later?
No, I want to...
Listen. Just give me 5 minutes. That's all I want. Just 5 minutes.
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Stanton.
Go away.
Now, look,
come back later. Go away. Go away.
It's a mile across the living room to your desk and the pistol in the middle drawer. You'd given it to Evelyn Arnold because she was afraid while you were away at the office. Because she couldn't stand being without you alone. You take it out. Notice how cold it feels in your hand. Check the breech and find it's loaded, ready to go. You're tense now as you sit down in the easy chair by the fireplace. 4 minutes left, Arnold, and you won't need all of it. The heat of your hand has warmed the handle. It feels more natural there. You look at it for a moment, then raise it slowly. Your hand tightens on the trigger.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with the strange ending of tonight's story.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now, back to The Whistler.
So the chain was broken, Arnold. Not in one place, but in two. Mrs. Bronson, of course, was the first to discover it. She'd been concerned over the way you sounded on the telephone and had hurried over to find you sprawled in the easy chair by the fireplace. A half hour later, Sergeant Cook was there, too, and the pieces began to fit together.
Now, Mrs. Bronson, you say you know something about all this?
Yes, in a way, I feel sort of responsible.
Responsible?
Well, you see, Mr. Stanton called me just before it happened, and, well, I told him Evelyn was at my house. Oh, I know I shouldn't have, but Evelyn was such a dear friend of mine, and...
Well,
I don't think I was a party to it. I never really approved. But there was this other person, a Mr. Haverhill.
Mr. Weston Haverhill.
Yes, Evelyn had been seeing him for some time. I told her she was very wrong, that the least she could do would be tell her husband she was in love with someone else. But she felt so sorry for Arnold. Said he was so dependent on her.
Yes?
Mr. Haverhill wanted to have it all out with Arnold, to be above board about the whole thing. But Evelyn couldn't face it. So I covered up for her.
What do you mean, covered up for her?
Well, Evelyn and Mr. Haverhill were going to spend the day together, something special. And I called Mr. Stanton's office and pretended I was Evelyn. Said she was at my house playing bridge. Then when he got home, found she wasn't there, he called me to check up on her.
And you told him the same thing?
Yes, I told him she'd just left. What else could I do?
Must have been a terrible shock when he found her there in the bathroom.
Yeah. Arnold couldn't stand it, poor man. He just had to be with her. You know?
Huh?
It makes sort of a perfect ending. He never would have been happy without her. He loved her so.
Next Wednesday at this same time, The Whistler will return with another strange tale. Featured in tonight's production were Elliot Lewis and B. Benaderet. This program is a featured production of the Columbia Broadcasting System and was directed by George W. Allen, with tonight's story by Robert Libet and Frank C. Burt.
From May of 1946, there's Broken Chain and Bill Forman starring as The Whistler. Well, that's all we have time for on this rendition of Yesteryear, but we invite you to join us again next week at this very same time for more of the best of the golden age of radio, right here on Yesteryear. Till then, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, volio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
KCEA Atherton Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District, home of Tide Academy, the peninsula's leading school for technology, innovation, design, and engineering. Thank you.
the moon are wondering where you can be. Yes, me and the moon are lonely for your company. Say, I've asked the moon to find you somewhere behind the stars. I want him to remind you how dear to me you are. Me and the moon are gazing through a hazy light. For all too soon I lost you on a summer night. I'm afraid of the dawn, 'cause you and the moon will both be gone. There's me and the moon, and pretty soon there'll just be me.
Music right now. The only station that plays the coolest hits by the coolest artists. The latest hits and greatest memories on Big Band 89.1 KCEA.
They still say I love you on
can hate. Woman needs man, and man must have his mate. That no one can deny. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by. Time goes by.
it's not a yacht. Have patience, 42.
Christmas can't come every day. Mink is what I want.
You don't say. Well, honey, that you'll only get one way.
How?
With patience, 42.
Courage, hope and love, faith and fortitude. Stop and stare, it's so hard to bear. Everybody knows you left me. It's the talk of the town. Every time we meet, my heart skips a beat. We don't stop to speak, though it's just a week. Everybody knows you left me. It's the talk of the town. We send out invitations to friends and relations, announcing our wedding day. Friends and our relations gave congratulations. How can you face them? What can you say? Let's make up, sweetheart. We can't stay apart. Don't let foolish pride keep you from my side. How can love like ours be ended? It's the talk of the town.
Sports. I loved the competition, the camaraderie, the bands, the crowds, all the pageantry, and I wanted to keep playing. But I graduated. No colleges called, and neither did the pros. So, to stay close to the game I loved, I decided to become a high school official. You know, a referee. When I played high school sports, I learned the importance of integrity, good sportsmanship, and respect for the rules. Now, as a high school official, I get to help model these same values to others. Maybe the colleges and the pros didn't call, but the kids did. And now, I'm enjoying the competition, the camaraderie, the bands, the crowds, and all the pageantry of high school sports all over again.
Learn more about the Sequoia Union High School District at SEQ.org. That's SEQ.org.
Heartaches, heartaches. My loving you meant only heartaches. Your kiss was such a sacred thing to me. I can't believe it's just a burning memory. Heartaches, heartaches. What does it matter how my heart breaks? I should be happy with someone new, but my heart aches for you.
Somebody whisper, please adore me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon, now I'm no longer alone. Without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.